morning, everyone. Sunday, January 25th, 2015. The subject is truth. And I think today we will start out with our lessons. There's a lot in this week's lessons to discuss, and then perhaps later on we'll get to the new birth. So, golden text, the truth of the Lord endureth forever. Would anyone like to comment on either the golden text or the responsive reading?
In just a second,
everyone has switching over. I'll keep you all on your toes.
The truth of the Lord endure forever is a powerful statement. I mean, endureth forever. Nothing can change it. It's that changeless truth, and that's what impressed me so much. The word of God, everlasting.
Yeah, it's a rock.
Something I can rely on.
Yes. Go ahead.
Because it's changeless, I can rely on it. And through my life, I can walk with it.
Yeah, and I thought, thank you, Florence. It was interesting. In the responsive reading, it often the responsive reading is the time to get your thoughts in a humble attitude, ready to receive the truth. And before you read the lesson, you should pray to ask God that you be receptive to the truth in the lesson. Every morning, pray that. It's, unto thee do I lift up my soul, you know, looking upward toward God, trusting in God. And show me thy ways, teach me thy paths. You don't feel you know something. God is our great and only teacher, and he's the one. And then lead me in thy truth. Again, teach me. On thee do I wait all the day. And then ask yourself, are you waiting on God all the day? Waiting on him, asking for his guidance and his direction. And then the meek will he guide in judgment, and the meek he will teach in his way. And what is your wonderful definition of meek, Lauren?
Oh, just like water, you will bend as God wants you. You go with it.
Yes,
the humility that bends with God's will.
Yes, just like the water takes the shape of a vessel, we have to have that total flexibility and meekness, submission to his will. Anyone else?
I think the golden text is a perfect treatment to whatever else appears to be going on in the world. You know, it appears that some people have power, they're trying to persuade their way, but there's only one thing that lasts, and that's the truth. You can't see it with your eyes or hear it with your ears, but it does exist. And not only that, it's the only thing that has power.
Thank you.
You're right, because the history has the kings came and they reigned and they sometimes disappeared. Kingdoms reigns and disappears. Only God's kingdom has endured.
Thank you. That's good to remember. Only God's kingdom. So we see kingdoms coming and going, and only God's kingdom.
Yeah, and
remains.
The treatment can be used in the chaos that is going on now in the Middle East, and with the terrorist organization coming in and trying to push fear in people. I think it's important for us to know, have this absolute knowledge that they will disappear like the rest of them have.
Good. Have the absolute knowledge that they will disappear like the rest of them have in the past. Evil destroys itself. That's all evil can do. It's self-destructive, and it will, but we need to know it and know it with all our hearts and minds and souls and continually knowing it. We know it during our watches, but you know it, knowing it all day. We think about it, you know that truth. It can't go anywhere or do anything because it is not of God.
One thing I found helpful when you get an untoward picture, make this statement, truth is still operating, like it always has and always will be. Just one quick little statement, but it's been very helpful to me.
Yeah, some quick statement that you have in your arsenal to kill it. Have it ready. So if you ever hear wars and rumors of wars, you have this statement to pierce it and destroy it, the truth. Now, what about the story this week in Acts? I think that's a great story to talk about, which is why I didn't want to skip this lesson. What's going on there? Let's see, Betty, what's happening?
Well, the apostles are preaching and healing and doing all kinds of good things, and the powers that be decide they don't like this. The high priest rose up, and they put him in prison, and the angel of the Lord opened up the prison doors and told him to go forth and speak in the temple. And so they did that, and they hauled him up in front of their tribunal. And my favorite part of this whole thing is they're wanting to put him to death and everything, and then this one Pharisee named, and I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Gamaliel, a doctor of the law, anyway, he basically said, I'm turning over here, refrain from these men. And the main point he had to make was, if it be of God, you cannot overthrow it, lest haply ye be found even to fight against God. And that if it was the work of men, it would come to naught, and not to, you don't really need to do anything. And I just thought that was the truth, just shined right through all of that.
Yes. Yeah, I was reading where in Matthew Henry, he said, you know, thank God for these people, sane people, who can quiet things. Otherwise, you know, the world would be caught on fire. That's pretty much what he says, when people get all incited. And here was the voice of reason, someone that they respected and listened to. And also, it proves to be true. And I think it's a wonderful way to think of most things. It's the tares and the wheat. You let it grow side by side, and the tares will become obvious, as will the wheat.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in verse 19, when they're put in prison for doing the work that God sent them to do, and the angel came and opened the prison for them. I think it's interesting here that the instruction here when they were released from prison was to go back to the temple and do the same thing they were doing that sent them to prison. I mean, he didn't tell them to back off or run away, just go back to the same people. I mean, for me, I think it was a very important part of the lesson, because like we see every day, everyone will try to silence the truth. Now it's up to us if we let it happen. We back off or continue to move forward. I mean, if it's your mission, if it's your, how do I put it, your divine command, you're not going to back away from it. It doesn't matter what the punishment is, what the suffering, persecution, it's our mission, and we have to carry on.
I think that's a great point. Because how many times do we back off from doing something because even though we are confident that it's right, it's so opposed by so many others that it just seems like it's not worth it, and we back off and we don't forge ahead. I know it happens to me. When I feel like I'm running up against a brick wall, when the opposition seems to be strong, I just, to back off seems like an easy thing to do. but it's never the right thing to do.
That's not the picture of the meek who bend to God's will, regardless of what the influences are impressed upon it.
Yes, and of course you use wisdom, I mean always wisdom, but in this case it was clear that God was directing them. And it's interesting, to go back to the temple, that's where all the people were. They didn't. It wasn't all go somewhere in secret, you know, and so you don't get everyone so riled up again. And then I loved, what did they say to them? I mean, they weren't pussyfooting around. What did they say?
I think Peter said, it's better for us to obey the voice, because the priest came back and asked them, did we not tell you not to come back here? I mean, something like that. And he was like, it's better for us to obey the voice of God than the voice of man.
So remember that too. And this goes back to what we talked about yesterday in the lesson on Esther. To obey the voice of God rather than the voice of men. And if you do that, you see the protection that came along with it. You get tremendous protection. But and what else did they say?
They said, the God of our fathers raised up Jesus, whom ye slew and hanged on a tree.
I know. I love that. I mean, they weren't meant
to. Headed it right back to them. He really skewered them.
They did.
In the same way Jesus did the Pharisees.
Yes. Yes. Without any care for their own selves or their own life, they told it like it was. And in a case like that, that was necessary. It had been a very evil thing to do that. So he threw it right back very courageously. And this, again, this is the moral courage that we talked about yesterday, as opposed to an animal courage.
I thought the timing was perfect as well, because they said this in when they went back to the temple in front of all the people. And remember, earlier in the story, they said multitudes of believers were added. So it was in front of all them as well.
Yes.
I also think the Sadducees or Pharisees, whatever their names are, I think they felt opposition to their own selfish goal, because multitudes were being drawn to the apostles, disciples, and these apostles, this multitude were being drawn away from the Pharisees' selfish, stupid heart, and going to this new light that everybody's been talking about in town, the wonderful healing and the wonderful message of Jesus Christ that the apostles were preaching. So multiple people were actually being drawn into them, taken away from the Pharisees. So I think that's part of what upset them. So they don't want it to happen.
Yeah, I mean,
that would
I'm
put
sure.
them out of business.
Right, I'm sure that's true. But there again, by their fruits ye shall know them. And because they were doing the healing work, they were attracting. And, you know, this is true about us, our church. We'll by our fruits, you will know us. And that's why it's so important that each one of us give to this as wholeheartedly as you possibly can. Because that makes a tremendous light that will attract. And that is all that's important about this church and the spiritualization of mankind.
I thought it was interesting, it was brought up yesterday, that Mordecai and Esther had no fear. Well, here, Peter and the disciples had no fear. And why was it that all of these people had no fear?
They trusted God.
They loved God. They loved the truth so much that anything unlike the truth.
Yeah, and they'd also recently been witness to the resurrection. They had seen the Christ raised from the dead after being 3 days in the tomb. I would think after that, there was very little you would be afraid of. And so if we have fear in our hearts, let's think about some of these things and think about, you know, do you, even though we weren't there, personally there, so to speak, the resurrection, we can be there in our thoughts and our thinking. Do we accept it as true? Do we realize how powerful it is? It should certainly help to wipe away a lot of our fears and doubts. We shouldn't be in a gray zone. We should either know it to be true or not. And what was Peter's history? Let someone else, okay. Benjamin. Let's see. How about you, Connie? What was Peter's history?
Well, he was always impetuous and racing off on his own without checking with God. And then they had the meal by the sea where Jesus told him to feed his sheep, and Peter sort of straightened up and went in the right way there.
Yeah, but Peter had been one kind of getting in trouble all the time, and yet look what great use he was to God at this point. And I know that Jesus knew that of him, that he would be of great use, and that his character, that kind of lively character, would be used by God. And it certainly was in this instance.
Yeah, I think Peter really threw himself into the work. You know, there was such an enthusiasm that I always get from him. You know, he jumps out of the boat and walks on the water, and he's the first to perceive the Christ. I mean, it's like he's always right up there at the front. And I give him credit for that, because sometimes he got really sharply because he was in the human mind. But, you know, he had his own glimpses, really strong glimpses of the truth, and I think it's because he put himself out there.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, he did. I mean, when Jesus asked his disciples, who was Jesus, Peter was the one who gave the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
Peter had the potential. He had the spiritual sense. And it just needed to be trained, be properly directed, and all the any personal sense had to be burned out. But it did. And he took it.
I also think he remembered when Jesus told him, upon you, Peter, I will build my church.
Yes.
Yeah, it was on that understanding of the truth of the Christ that his church would be built.
So,
you know what I find...
Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I say what I find interesting is that you look at the Pharisees and that, let's call it an organization, and they thought they were right. They thought they were right. So this new idea came in, and they rejected it. Now, the apostle stood up the gentleman's name, he stood up and said, if this is of God, we can do nothing against it. So if we fast forward to today, what if our church had approached it this way? You know, after Mrs. Eddy passed, the church, you know, the board made many decisions on their own, right? What they thought was best. Now, many other inspired people came to them with an idea, and they rejected it. And I think it's a warning. It's a solemn warning. When you're in a church, you think you're right. And that's what happened with the Pharisees. They thought they were right. And they were very slow in learning this. And then the same thing happened in the mother church. You know, they were wrong. They were in the wrong. People with right ideas came, and they rejected them. So I think the warning is, if you're in a church, it's very possible you're going to hang on to what you think is right. And when ideas come, it's very easy to cast them out and say, no, this doesn't fit what we think. And I you know, looked at the story and thought, all right, how can we make this relevant to us today? And so I think new ideas that come, we have to be very careful that we don't just throw them out because we just think we're right.
It's a great warning to approach God as if you don't know a thing. And it happens within an organization. It happens without an organization. It doesn't really matter. there is a danger that thinking that an organization itself means that something is right. The organization doesn't mean a darn thing.
Yeah, I think the trap is actually within the organization because, you know, organizations have, you know, rules, they have indoctrinations, they have ways that they've done things. And so I think it is actually, it's probably easier as an, if you're just a, you know, quote unquote, independent, you know, when an idea comes, I think it might be easier. But I think when you're part of an organization, I think it's harder. Because you're, that's just how it comes to me.
You're watchful.
Yeah.
Well, and it is why, you know, we encourage the independent thing in our church. It is how we came about, and we do encourage that and respect it in each other. It's certainly what we talked about yesterday in this story of Esther, was the independent action. Linda brought that out, the independent action that saved the day in that situation where they all could have been slaughtered. So, absolutely, it's something we always have to be alert to and aware of, and it's.
And that's why Mrs. Eddy strove to create a spiritual organization, because she saw the danger of human organization very clearly. And what the board of directors did 100 years ago was they humanized what Mrs. Eddy established. They established a human organization. And that was its downfall. So that is why it's very important, and you're right to bring this up, Tony. It's very, very important that we see church as a spiritual organization, and that's its only value. The definition of church is the only church that we have. That's why we don't have rules in this church.
Yeah, we have very little in the way of any of that, and that's why we had a board meeting that only lasts an hour, and we have no new business and no old business, and we don't have all this discussion and arguing over various things. It's just simple. Every committee chairman turning to God for their answers, and that's the only way, and that's the only way it ever will be. And we stand, and I said that earlier, we stand by what Gamaliel said. If, you know, if what's here is right, it will prosper, and if it's not, it won't.
And, so. And if it doesn't, we'll get rid of it.
Yeah.
And that's why, and this is another thing, you know, there are churches where the board of trustees literally run the church. In fact, there are churches where the chairman of the board of trustees literally runs the church. And that is a huge, huge danger, as Tony rightly points out. We have, in this church, we have committees, and we have chairs of the committees or the activities, whatever you want to call them, and the chairs run their activities under God's direction. The Board of Trustees doesn't really run anything in this church, and we make them, and we strive to never, ever get to the point where anybody's running anything.
To some degree, we certainly had that with Mrs. Evans. But that was a time and a place when it was needed and necessary. But it's over. Anybody else?
I think it's 22.
Okay, let's see. Florence, you were waiting.
No, I just feel that, you know, in this church, each one is the church. And
yes.
So I don't know that I have that feeling of this is an organization and all this. There's a sense of you doing with God individually, and then it comes together collectively to bless the world. That's the way, the only way I can see it.
And what
it
I
does, because
thank you.
Thank you for it.
Thank you.
And that is the right sense.
And what I find so refreshing, if someone has a problem, something that they don't are upset with or don't like, then they step up and correct it. For instance, with Jim, where he missed the newsletter, so he wrote a newsletter. No one told him to do that. No one asked him to. He did it himself. You know, and if you have an objection to anything, you have the freedom to rise up instead of just be critical of it, but to change it and to do something. You don't like the testimony? Give a good one. You don't like the reading? Volunteer to read and give some good ones. And it's wonderful to see people who are taking action, because what happens in an organization is where people just get critical. This isn't right, that's not right, I don't like him, he did something wrong, I don't like the curtains, I don't like this. Pretty soon, they're no longer around, and well, they should be. Okay, who else was, Tony, did you want to?
Anybody else?
I want to add something, too, after Tony.
Okay, Linda, go ahead.
Well, Tony can go first. I can wait.
No, you go right ahead, Linda.
I just wanted to share in line with what you guys were talking about. I think Peter gives us an example when he has that dream, and it comes to him that what God had made clean not to call common. So he had even questioned his own rules and codes that he was going through at the time. And he's kind of an example. He was a sense of church at the time. And so he even had to change his own thought about what he thought was right at the time. So I think he's a good example of questioning what you're holding to and being willing to be flexible and change.
Very good. Excellent. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Christianity was radical. Radical. Today, Christian Science is radical. I mean, it is something very radical. We need to be willing to change.
Also, I wanted to go back to Gamaliel. He was a Pharisee. He was part of the organization. So I think we got to be careful about taking this organization thing and throwing it entirely out the window altogether. The thing that was important about him was that he didn't go along with what was going to be accepted with the rest of the group, but rather he had a conscience and stated what he did. As far as we know, he was the only one of the Pharisees that did this.
He was also a teacher of the Pharisees.
He was having a reputation,
yeah.
Doctor of the law, and a Pharisee. He was part of that group. And yet, he was the one who stepped up and did the right thing. So, being in the organization or out of the organization has got its issues, but the only thing that matters is the independent thinking, regardless of where you are. Where's God in all the picture?
And it would be very difficult to have no organization. I mean, if we had no organization, we would have no lessons. We would have a lot of nothing. It requires something, a gathering of people, as Luann called it, collective love. You can call it whatever you want. But it requires getting along with each other and listening to each other's ideas and listening and accepting, or if you don't like it, to speak up. And we encourage that.
One of the things that I think when we talk about Peter and when we think about independent thinking, this is what is so powerful about this group, because Mary Baker Eddy starts out saying, the time for thinkers has come. You know, so this radical truth is what we are working with again and again in humility. We have to rediscover what it is for us every time we work, and we work together, and that takes us further.
Thank you. And Tom told me recently, that was very sweet. I don't know if he's still here and wants to say it for himself, but he said there have been many independents, and there probably will continue to be. But there's only one church that we know of that has survived and is doing all the things we're doing. And sure, we are not perfect. No one claims to be perfect, although that's their ultimate identity.
Yeah.
But so
we strive.
Yeah, we're striving.
More prophetic,
and we have a lot of goals. Yes, and a lot of sleepless nights over many of these things, asking God, praying what to do next.
I think this goes back to Beatitudes too, because if you're prideful and stuff, God's not being able to teach you what he wants. You're just going to sit in your teeth and run with it, and it's not going to do what God wants.
Right.
And also, God is constantly telling us, even when you're doing the wrong thing, there's always a message to change your way of life. The only difference is that some people listen and some doesn't. They continue. Even the time of the Pharisees, the Pharisee who listened to God and came up with the with the comment that if this is of God, we cannot stop it, something like that. I try to remember exactly how he put it. But even the time of Paul, he was part of the Pharisees. I mean, he was well educated and he understands the laws correctly. And he was actually helping the Pharisees by arresting the early Christians and bringing them back to Jerusalem for prosecution. And he too thought he was doing the right thing. In his eyes, it was the right thing to do because they believed that they were the people doing the right thing. But God spoke to him on his way to Damascus. He was about to arrest another group, which Ananias was part of them, was a great priest. And God stopped him and sent a message on his way and told him, no, that's not the right thing to do.
Right.
And he changed his way. It became a very important part of the ministry.
And that is the power of truth.
Yeah.
That is only God can do that. Only truth can do that.
And really what amazes me in speaking to all of you really here and elsewhere is what you come up with, your independent thinking. What you say, how you're not just being spoon-fed. You are thinking, volunteering to do things, and it's quite tremendous. We do have a group of independent thinkers. I thank God for that. Mm. We could not exist otherwise.
May I say something about a sleepless night that you just talked about, Mary? Because I woke up at 3:30 this morning, and I had to write something down that it was a dream and it was some kind of guidance. I wrote it down and I would like to share it on the forum, maybe. If it's okay, I don't know. Maybe you look at it before, but it was something I had to do this. Not 1.5 hours I stayed up to write it all down. And I think it has to do with truth. It has to do with all the points that we have in this lesson this week. It's just incredible. This coincidence for me is so revealing.
Thank you, Uta. And sometimes in the wee morning of the night, you hear God speaking in the quiet. Mm-hmm. And that's often.
Yeah, in the dream.
Often I hear of you, the good workers, are up during the night, you know, struggling with things or questioning and turning to God for answers. And it's a good time to write things down or to be waiting, as the responsive reading said, waiting on the Lord, waiting for his answers and his direction. And we have nothing planned out very far in the future because we just take it each day. Father, what would you have us do today? What is your plan today? And we carry that forward. Anybody else on this that we missed? Jeremy?
A few weeks ago, I had been praying about integrating sight with the system. And I woke up and I had this really clear idea of like how to do it. And then I started dozing off and then I was like, oh no, get up and write this down. So, and I did, and I'm really happy that I did. It was the next day that I was able to get Zari and Uta in on it. So.
Yeah. And truly there have been an amazing amount of changes that have taken place in a short period of time in this church, and I'm sure they will continue. Sometimes just change for the sake of change, however, is not good. It has to be inspired by God, not just jumping around like a Mexican jumping bean, as they call, where you're just here, there, and everywhere. There's got to be of God leading it. So thank you all for your comments. Okay, in Science and Health, if man would bring to bear upon the study of the science of mind half the faith they bestow upon the so-called pains and pleasures of material sense, they would not go from bad to worse until disciplined by the prison and the scaffold. But the whole human family would be redeemed through the merits of Christ. It goes on, but what does that mean to us, to you?
To put a little effort into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you only need to put half the effort that you put into worldly things.
Yeah, just 51% will do.
Yeah. And to be disciplined by the prison and the scaffold. think of it. That's the direction you're going when your life is totally materialistic. You're going to, sooner or later, you're going to be disciplined by one of those. Not to mention that we have this wonderful opportunity for the, to bring in the whole family, redeemed through the merits of Christ. You know, we don't always know what has happened, what our work is doing. We don't know. God knows, though. It's interesting, we've talked about when Mrs. Eddy was around and all her praying and working that she did. And what happened after the after she left? And one thing, I just read this recently in preparation for the Esther class, and I hadn't realized this, but in World War I, Germany was trying to get rid of the English language. And Eustace says that that was the young child. To get rid of the English language would have been to
get rid of Christian Science and Science and Health.
Science and Health, yes. This came on the heels of Francis Thurber Steele being in Germany. This was a wicked plot going on. And Eustace speaks of it in his book. I think it's on a section called The Attacking of the Jews. But he brings that out. But you see, this happened after Mrs. Eddy passed. Many things happened, including, well, two world wars, the second one being unthinkable. So,
and what,
go ahead.
And Mary, when you think about English in Germany, when you read Dorothee von Moltke, she and her husband Helmut translated from English to German the first Science and Health. And there was this, you know, people were afraid of working with another language. This is a fear in Germany today because they're afraid they don't get it right. And the translation business causes so many problems because we have to feel the spirit of what is written. And this is a big thing. And when you notice how Ute does, when she does her readings, you can tell that she feels both languages. And that's a big plus for Christian Science in Germany because most people only do everything in German and don't understand enough.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mrs. Eddy had quite a reading about it, quite a, you know, anguishing over whether to have her textbook translated because she knew the importance of words. So these are just things I'm bringing to let you realize the importance of our work. Some things we do see. We know things that are getting better, happening, the leavening of truth going on. But there are other things we might never know about, but never doubt that this work is important. It's the most important thing you can be doing. And this sentence certainly brings it out.
I know how hard it is for me. I think it's remarkable. That was, like you said, that's to get rid of Christianity from the world. Because without English, it's hard to understand. Like Uta said, to be able to, when you wait, to feel, unless if you speak another language, to be able to feel the spirit coming from the reading. I mean, that's why even right now, I just cannot read another translation when I read the Bible. I love reading King James Version of the Bible. And I was happy when I found out that that's what we read here. Even though it's written in Old English book, the feeling you have from reading it is different from when you read all these new translations they have out there.
Yes.
It's never the same.
Yeah. And our next Liberator, Linda's working on an article about the King James Version of the Bible. I'm announcing it. Anyway, but she had seen that DVD about how the blood, sweat, and tears went into that translation of the Bible.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that the vitality and the truth that's in our Plainfield Church causes us to spend more and more of our life on the work of the church as opposed to the pains and pleasures of material sense. I mean,
that's great, and that's true, and I feel that too.
And I find myself, you know, letting go of things piece by piece. Yeah, because there's more. There's more. Oh, I don't know. Just inspiration from our communal operation of the truth to work more for this.
Thank you.
Right, and that's why each one of you has been led to the church, because you were ready. Ready to pitch in and do what God wants you to do.
No, and I find what Fairley said is true too, which is of great value, that I spend probably a lot more doing this if we didn't have a church, if I was independent and maybe didn't have the accountability that we have here to delve into some of the Bible stories, our lessons, our prose works, to listen, to pray, to be active. You have to learn to demonstrate. This is the reason, the only reason, that we gather together. And in doing this, it is a collective power of unity, spiritualizing the world. And don't doubt it. And if you do doubt it, then you shouldn't be here, or you should read prose works and other things, which will tell you otherwise, which is why we do this.
And Jesus even spoke of it. Anybody remember what he said about that? Where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them.
And it has to be in his name. And that's where we meet each other. That's why we feel like a family, because we have this common goal, purpose, love. And it's a tremendous thing. And it's a sacred thing. And it should not be thought of lightly or taken for granted. It's not easy to see this. This doesn't happen by being stagnant and falling asleep. Believe me, it doesn't. It's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes constantly, and all of you who are part of it understand it and are coming to understand it more and more.
Well, it seems like if you watch the early workers, even if some of them were out west, or if you go to the story about the woman in Germany, they're always, if you're doing your best work, you're surrounded by people. You're healing or teaching or working, so regardless of how it forms itself, you have to have some type of, I don't know, a group, and so you need to understand church in the higher sense of how to work with people and be with people and feed them and be fed. So I don't think you can get away from it, even if you don't have the so-called human definition of church.
Thank you.
Oh, well, I'd like to say something from Germany. Sorry, may I say something?
Okay, Luca.
There is a 500 years of Luther translating the Bible, and there will be celebrations all over Germany about that. The printing, the first printing of the Bible, for the Protestant Church. Because first the Bible was only for the preachers in Latin, and he translated it into German for everybody.
And that was a very tremendous thing. And that's how if it was just in Latin, no one else could read it. If you could only get Science and Health in the reading rooms, it's not available. This is part of a scheme, a plot of animal magnetism, which is really has no intelligence, but it's the absence of light when these things start happening. So you don't get the Bible, you don't get Science and Health. It all becomes, I don't know, and then you don't spend any time reading any of it. You get all involved with your novels and your TV shows or your sports, and pretty soon it all just goes down the tube. So, thank you.
Is you know what the Pharisees we are doing in those days?
Right, probably.
To restrict people from having the freedom to learn and understand God in their own person, in their own independent, individual way.
Yes.
Our church is really demonstrating the one idea of the one mind.
Yeah, and that takes work, and we don't always agree. We don't always agree. So when we don't agree, ideas brought up that we don't agree about, we go back and we pray and we work, and then we independently come up with different answers. and then a solution is made that way. And it is a result of the one mind working. But it's not that we're all just a bunch of sheep here, you know, far from it. And we do have controversy. So, anyway, also in the lesson,
if we don't lose why we're here, then it makes sense. There's only one holy purpose why we're here.
Right.
If we have our eye on the purpose, the goal of why we're here, what is demanded of us, then we will each work independently as much as possible to make it, you know, to be under God's will, what has to happen.
Yes.
Right. And what's remarkable is even though everyone works independently, they work in harmony. Nobody bumps into anybody else.
Yeah.
Or displaces anybody else.
Yeah, that's how you know it's God's work.
Yes.
Me.
It's the sun and it's the sunlight each shining.
And you know, if someone isn't right, if they're not happy, if there's a sense of pride, if they can't work together, if it's their way or the highway, they eject themselves. And I'm grateful for that too. Nothing has to be done. They will just go. And that's how it should be. Because if you're really living that truth, it is a law of annihilation to everything unlike itself.
And we've seen many people come and go for that reason. They get to a point where their pride is more important or just prevents them from continuing to go. And they leave. And no hard feelings. That's fine. We're here to support anybody that wants to grow.
Yes.
Period.
And I'm so grateful you're there. If you weren't there, I seriously don't know how I could keep going, because I feel the support from every single one of you.
I agree with that.
I agree as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. And that's...
And may God keep us on this straight and narrow path.
Exactly. And it, believe me, it's not easy. And if anybody thinks it is, it's not. Not an easy... What we're doing is not easy. It might seem easy, but it is not. It takes a lot of work, a lot of dedication. And I'm so grateful for those of you who are willing to do it. So, well, there was a lot of good in this lesson, and that's why I didn't want to skip it. I have not forgotten New Birth, and we will be discussing it. I am going to end yesterday in first edition listening to Andrew's reading. They were so good, and there's part of it I want to read that I that goes along with this story, I believe, and things that you are facing, because I hear people, you know, in their families, maybe people going on different directions, different courses, and what do you do about it? How do you deal with it? How do you handle it? And I mean, this story of Peter and what he did was quite radical and clear. He didn't go along with it, and he stood for what was right. So this is in first edition. And I really urge you, those of you who can, Saturday mornings, to join us listening. You know, Andrew has done a great work in the reading of all of this. Science and Health, Prose Works, first edition. And it's excellent to take part in it. It gives you a little, first edition gives you a little fresh approach to what you're also reading in our current edition. So Mrs. Eddy says, never soil your garments with conservatism or let another's error dim the luster of your own truth. Always separate yourself from evil. Right is radical. And those walking in the light are like eyes accustomed to the light that must have it, for they cannot see in darkness. While those accustomed to darkness like it and push boldly on. Flowers turn to the sun or fade and lose fragrance in the darkness. If you have grown out of former things, hesitate not to put them away and fear not for conscience sake to overstep the boundaries and break the strong chains of old opinions. You must take up this cross if you follow Christ, truth, and never hold on to what you cannot understand or breathe an immoral atmosphere that you cannot purify. When error confronts you, spare not the rebuke or the explanation that destroys it. If you would benefit yourself or others, but if, having ears, they hear not, neither will they understand that they might be converted and you might heal them, thereafter let them alone. But be sure you drop into no conservative position. Always keep well furnished your own armor. So it goes on. It starts on 178, but it's wonderful. And that is our independent action. And so we thank you all. Go forward to a good service.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.